Good afternoon, everyone. What a beautiful Sabbath day. And I suppose we've had a couple of people already mention about the personal appearance campaign in Toronto, Canada, tomorrow night and Tuesday night, so I guess I can also ask you to please be praying about that. We do want to make sure that God is with us and that we're presenting that to what looks like a pretty nice crowd up in Canada, and we're looking forward to doing that and doing a follow-up on all of the trumpets we've been able to get out in that part of the world. I enjoyed the sermonette, and I thought it was moving, and the music, certainly very moving, and it's amazing how that reaches our emotions when we have outstanding music like that. It just moves you tremendously. Well, as you probably noticed, my prediction about the election wasn't quite accurate. But I always have something to say either way it goes. So I wanted to, I still have a lot to say about the election here in the U.S. I think I might have been in the spirit of Oklahoma because I don't know if you paid much attention to the election in Oklahoma, but let me just read you a few facts here. Republican presidential nominee John McCain got the biggest victory margin in Oklahoma on Tuesday, winning every county in the state in results that mirrored those of 2004. He had got 65.6% of the vote in Oklahoma. Oklahoma was the only state in which Obama didn't win a single county. Exit polls of Oklahoma voters showed McCain carried every age and income group and got about two-thirds of the vote from both male and female voters. The Gaddy noted that nearly 54% of those polled after voting on Tuesday were identified as white evangelicals. Now, they're not our friends, but we do share some values. And those folks are very conservative, he said. They made up their minds early. Oklahoma is clearly trending very Republican. Liberal national Democrats are not where we're going to go. And I think in many ways that's good for us and good for the work. And perhaps is the reason God established us here in the first place. But KOCO.com, the television station, said Republicans took control of the Oklahoma Senate for the first time in state history in legislative races Tuesday, in which the GOP has also tightened their grip on the state house. History was made. For the first time ever, you've got a Republican-controlled legislature. So I thought, well, that's kind of amazing that it's so contrary to the national polls. But I have to tell you that when I did see the results of the election, it did leave me in a profound sadness. Not because of any one man, but because of the radical turn in America. I mean, the radicals have really gotten control of this nation. And I even woke up during the night, and it was hard to get my mind off that. And I think we all realize, brethren, that this is now a very different America than it was before the election. And you're going to see that in many ways. Of course, it doesn't make any difference who's in there. It's obviously going very badly, with the economy even now hanging by a thread. So this is an interesting time in America. And I wanted to read you something I wrote from Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 36, verses 12 through 14, just a little excerpt from that, where I said, God, and he did that which was evil in the sight of the Eternal, his God, and humbled not himself before Jeremiah the prophet, speaking from the mouth of the Eternal. And so the world doesn't notice that. It says in Ezekiel 33 that these words that we're delivering to this world are from God's mouth. And here was Jeremiah that had words right out of God's own mouth, and he couldn't get anybody to listen to him. They simply wouldn't listen. Now, they listened to men. They were looking for saviors in men, but they wouldn't listen to words from a man, but that were right out of the mouth of God. And so God expects us to discern when those words are coming from God's mouth. I quoted another scripture, but they mock the messengers of God, that's verse 16, and despised his words and misused his prophets until the wrath of the Eternal arose against his people and there was no remedy. Or they'd reached the point of no return. There was no remedy. Why send a prophet? Why send a messenger? Why send a message when they've already absolutely said they're not going to listen? They're not going to, we've reached the point of no return. They're not going to pay attention. There's no remedy through words, except for individuals. But the nations are going down, and they're going down very fast, of Ephraim and Manasseh and Judah. Here is a messenger coming before the worst time of suffering ever. And God is so in tune with all of this. He knows what's coming and what's going to happen. And I believe we had a Feast of Tabernacles that was considerably better than the year before, because God is preparing us for all of this that's coming. God is always there preparing His people, isn't He? He loves His people and prepares them for what's coming. That's the loving God that we serve. Now we just have to make sure we don't let Him down. In that Lamentation booklet, God says He is going to punish us more than Sodom. Now, that's a strong statement. God is going to punish us more than Sodom. I mean, Sodom was just left with nothing but ashes. Biblical Israel is going to go through a nuclear holocaust because we're so evil, and because of our upside-down homes and our children who have not been educated on how to do anything much, certainly haven't done well in their voting, I would think, if you want to look at it that way. And now we have very radical people that really, radical white people, frankly, that are responsible for a radical president. Very radical people. God says our land is just filled with bloody crimes and drugs and pornography and every evil you can imagine. And yet all these politicians keep talking about how good America is, how good we are. What a wonderful nation this is. Well, that isn't the way God sees it, as we know. This is an abominable nation. You ought to be setting an example for God, but they're not. And I just marveled at all these negative truths that came out right at the end of the campaign in this election. And it didn't seem to make any difference at all. It's as if they just have closed their minds and they're not going to listen. And they just know they're right. So they're not listening. They want to go on with their fantasy. And they've reached the point of no return. And oh, brethren, do we see what that means for this land? Do we see what is about to happen to this land? I mean, look at the changes that have happened just in 5 years. Mr. McDonald was talking about that. What about all these changes that are going on? Look what this nation was even 5 years ago as compared to now. And I do think God tweaked the election in 2000 for Mr. Bush in a way simply to protect the work so we could do the work more effectively. But apparently we don't have much time left, and so that's not necessary this time around. You've never seen it so bad in this land as we see it today, facing the worst disaster ever. And just think about the huge shift. I mean, who would have ever thought a few years ago that we'd shift to the most radical people in this land and choose them to use us, or excuse me, to rule us and use us in many ways. I mean, look how radical the supporters of Mr. Obama were and are in Congress and the media and our educational institutions. It's if they're in some kind of a trance. What is happening to America? Can we explain that from the Bible? What is happening? Now, it would be a shame, brethren, if we, as all of these terrible things unfold, if we fail to see what the good news here really is. How could the world, after they receive God's Holy Spirit, how could they ever fail to understand how absolutely, totally incompetent and ignorant human beings are when it comes to ruling this world? I mean, just a little reasoning, human reasoning that's somewhat founded in something substantial could see that. I mean, really, brethren, there are people in this land that still are pretty solid in their thinking, maybe not very many of them, but they're just shaking their head and asking themselves, what has just happened? What has just happened in America? And they don't know what the solution is. They don't know. But we know. Here's a little group of people. We don't have a big educational institution and don't want one, but we know where the hope lies. And we know how this problem is going to be solved. But we've reached the point of no return. And I wanted to focus a little more today, maybe a good bit more today, on why we've reached the point of no return. Why have we reached the point of no return? We certainly see in Lamentations that we have. But why? Well, I want to give you one big reason. This is something Pat Buchanan wrote in the Weekly Times. The Washington Weekly Times on November the 3rd, 2008, the title of it, U.S. media have earned a nation's contempt, but apparently not enough. But he says, recently the New York Times did a takeout on Cindy McCain that delved back into her problem with prescription pills. Yet when Hillary Clinton's campaign manager Mark Penn brought up Mr. Obama's cocaine use on Hardball, he was savaged by folks for whom the Times is the golden standard. The people apparently had a right to know about Mr. Bush's old DUI arrest a week before the 2000 election, but no right to know about how and when Mr. Obama was engaged in the criminal use of cocaine. Now, again, that seems to be pretty common these days. It still can be very damaging to human beings, as we all know. But politics today is just right in the cesspool, and especially on the left, their whole goal is to destroy anybody who opposes them. I mean, not just win and have a certain love for them or a certain affection for them, because we all should be believing in the same values, essentially. But where has the character gone? Mr. Buchanan wrote, the media cannot get enough of the Saturday Night Live impersonations of Mrs. Palin as a bubblehead. News shows pick up the Tina Fey clips and run them to the merriment of all. I've just seen a couple of clips on the news. I don't watch Saturday Night Live, but anyhow, a lot of people do. Can one imagine Saturday Night Live doing weekly send-ups of Michelle Obama and her "I've never been proud of my country" statement, and or this just downright mean America? using a black comedian to mimic and mock her voice and accent. Saturday Night Live would be facing hate crime charges. What is the difference? What is happening to America? Why can we be so evil and so cruel? And what is wrong with those people? Everybody sees how insanely evil that is. What's wrong with these people? What is going on in this nation that one day would have been absolutely, those people would have been kicked out of office, or even in their attempt to get into office, would have been stifled very quickly? What has happened to the media? They talk more about Sarah Palin's clothes than they do, considerably more than they do about Mr. Obama's past associations. Isn't that a kind of madness? Why are these people acting like that? What is the reason for it? It's different than anything we've ever seen before. Why is it happening? Have you talked to people like, you hear Pat Buchanan, people like that, that really are pretty solid in a lot of their views? They don't understand really what is happening, and other conservatives are just shaking their head and trying to be positive, and yet they're discouraged. Many of them are discouraged about what is happening in America, and wondering what they can do to solve it. Now, the United Kingdom has really embraced this media over here, and they're just rejoicing. In fact, much of the world is rejoicing because of Mr. Obama's victory. And well, okay, but where is it taking us, and what does it mean? I'm not impressed when terrorist nations rejoice over our election, or you, but they have. And now they want to talk to our president about peace. So I guess peace is about to break out. Most of the Jews voted for Mr. Obama. And their nation in the Middle East is ready to just topple over into the abyss. How do you explain that? You think the radical left is going to be looking after Israel? Do the Jews really believe that? What's wrong with these people? What is wrong in the thinking of these people in America? Well, there was a lot of warning right there at the end, and I just marveled that none of it seemed to register. And you know what, brethren? Satan had been preparing for this for a long time. He's had time to keep preparing. Satan is outstanding at organizing and preparing to entrap people. He's a master at that. He's been doing it for so long. And look what he did to one third of the angels. How did he do that? How did this evil being, how did he turn one third of the angels against God? How did he do that? Isn't that just dumbfounding? But he did. What a power that is. What a power that evil being has. Now the things are getting more intense, and they stopped to white racists who were attempting to assassinate Mr. Obama. Racist thugs who are wanting war, and God's going to give them plenty of that. I want to give you a report from a foreign source, but I want to just kind of give you some idea before I get into some scriptures here about how many things could happen that would really, really cause serious problems in America overnight. This is taken from the Daily Telegraph. That's the most conservative paper in Britain, at least a major one. And this writer says he has already, Mr. Obama has already been the target of two assassination plots and delivered a victory speech from behind bulletproof glass. Now, he's got a pretty good idea of how dangerous it is. Bulletproof glass. American politics today. Better get behind a glass because somebody may be shooting at you while you're giving that speech. In May 2007, fears for his life led to him being the most heavily guarded U.S. presidential candidate ever when he was placed under Secret Service guard. The potential threats against him are numerous and are likely to come from aid groups of any number of organizations in and outside the U.S. I mean, do you think maybe Ahmadinejad might think, well, let's see now, what if we were to take Mr. Obama out with a terrorist attack? What would that do to America? Think maybe that might plunge them into a civil war? It's conceivable. It's certainly conceivable, isn't it? And that's the kind of state America's in today. This article continues. Already there's speculation that Senator Obama might not live to see out his term. Just hours after his victory, the term Obama assassination appeared on the top 100 Google search teams. Yes, there's a lot of white hatred and a lot of black hatred. That's how you start race wars. But what kind of hope do we have to tell them about, brethren? What kind of a hope are we going to show them? See, we do solve those problems. And we know there's a way to solve them. And nobody can seem to solve those problems. They're just too big for them. Well, I don't think I need to read any more of this. But the Ku Klux Klan guy, this white supremacist, says we're in a race war. And he's full of hatred for the blacks. And he wants a race war. And he'll have one. Perhaps Mr. Obama's main weakness was he only won 52% of the popular vote. That means he really just won a little over half. So it wasn't so good in that respect. There is an article, I'll just kind of paraphrase this to you. And I want you to think about it because I thought it really was a profound article from the Wall Street Journal. This guy, Fouad Ajami, wrote this in the Wall Street Journal October 29, 2008. And he's an Arab and he's lived over in the Middle East and he was really moved by all these crowds coming to Mr. Obama. And he said, before this, that hasn't been a prominent feature in American politics. Why is that? Why hasn't it been there before? What is really happening there when they get all these huge crowds together and you wonder, well, what are they doing there? What are they looking for? Well, now, he says, they see, the Americans see and have a certain distress on what is happening in this country, and they're looking for somebody to sort of save them like they do in the Middle East. Well, we've got all these problems here. We need a savior. And so they began to get these huge crowds and practically worship a human being. He wrote in this article, I can quote this part, I guess. He said, in the fashion of the crowd that seeks and sees injustice of retribution, Mr. Obama's supporters have been willing to overlook his means and who he is. Well, this is their words. And so a candidate pledged to good government and to ending the role of money in our political life opts out of public financing of presidential campaigns. What of it? The end justifies the means. And so they believe they're here to save America. And they're going to do just the opposite. But he said, this guy said, look, I've seen these men come on the scene so often with their charisma, and everybody is so moved, and they're yelling, and they're getting emotional, and they're crying. And they pick this man of charisma, and almost every single time he has wrecked their country. He said, I've seen that so many times in the Arab world. Now I see it in America. Isn't that amazing? What do you suppose is behind it? What's stirring up all this fervor and this emotional turmoil people are going through? They want a redeemer, he said. They want a redeemer. They sort of want a savior. And he said, "You can do." He said that Mr. Obama is doing is speaking in phrases where you can believe practically anything you want to. You can believe anything. It's just left to your imagination. And there is a spirit moving in this land like it's never done before. And it's not good news. It's not good news for America, but it is good news when you look at what is going to end it all. It's the best news we could ever possibly hear. What about education? We have written about Bill Ayers, and a man that Mr. Obama has been close to. And the proof is there, the documents are there. But he even today praises him because of his educational reform. This unrepentant terrorist is in there reforming our education and polluting and corrupting our youth. And he praises him. And you have 3,200 other supporters, professors that said they support Bill Ayers. And you don't hear any of the rest of the academic professors say anything. They don't say anything. They're just silent. As if, well, that's not so bad. This is education. We want to hear different ideas. And Satan is really getting the upper hand. Let's be honest about all this. I mean, who in the world, in the right mind, wants to see a terrorist teach their children? Who wants to see that? What kind of a mind is that that thinks that's good? And that thinking has gotten a stranglehold on the idiotic education of this world. What's wrong with those people? What is education? Filling your children with terrorist ideas? Well, they're going to end up cozying up to terrorists until somebody kills them. But I think just the fact that the rest of these university professors didn't speak up speaks volumes in itself. I think that you can see even some of the conservative commentators move somewhat to the left. That's the way it works. You see all this landslide. I think even Bill O'Reilly's done that somewhat, not to a great degree, but somewhat. But he is still pretty solid in his views overall, I think. He said he had this Newsweek managing editor come in and talk to him, and he said, "Look, I've been reading this magazine for 20 years. And it's, I've never seen such a change in a magazine as I've seen in Newsweek." And he said, "Well, can you explain that to me?" And the managing editor sat there and said, "Well, I just don't see it that way." he must be not quite truthful, but it just shows you how deeply deceived these men are. They really see it that way, and at least, well, a little lie here and there. But this is the way they think. See, look at the human mind. What's wrong with the human mind? They can sit there and watch something like that happen and be like the old proverbial frog just sitting there in the water, and you keep just gradually heating it up, and he just sits there until he boils to death. The human mind is so sick, so inadequate, and yet we want to trust it today, but don't know what we're really trusting. Well, as this one reporter wrote, they won't change because America has changed. I wanted to read something to you that I read you last week. And I just want you to think about this because it's such a fundamental point. And I'm hoping to get around to write a personal on this. But listen again to, I want you to see, brethren, what, not just Mr. Obama, he's much less responsible for this than those supporters of his and those left-wing politicians and even the media, for that matter. But notice what he says, and here's what the radical left wants. And this ought to scare people if they really knew what was happening. He said, and this is a radio interview he gave in 2001, and he said this, and to the extent as radical as I think people tried to characterize the war in court, it wasn't that radical. It didn't break free from the essential constraints that were placed by the founding fathers in the Constitution. It didn't break free from the essential constraints that were placed by the founding fathers. Now here is this man who's been so soon on the scene, and 3 years in the Senate and half of that running for President of the United States. And he not only wants to be president, he wants to change the Constitution. He wants to correct the founding fathers. Well, now that sounds like maybe his past associations did impact him, don't you think? Don't you think maybe it did? I mean, you can have your own ideas about that, but I'd have to say it did affect him. But look, that's the way the radical left thinks. He continues, at least it's been interpreted, and the Warren Court interpreted in the same way, that that generally the Constitution is a charter of negative liberties. And it says that the states can't do this, says what the federal government can't do to you, but it doesn't say what the federal government or the state government must do on your behalf. Isn't that amazing how ignorant the founding fathers were? They just didn't see that, he thinks. But they did see that. And that's why they put the constraints there. They saw how evil human nature is and how radical it can get, because a lot of those people that founded this came out from under a tyranny. And they wanted something to stop the tyrant, to hold back the tyrant so he wouldn't abuse them so badly as they had been abused. This guy wrote, the entire purpose of the Constitution was to limit government. This is taken from Bill Whittle, National Review Online. And the entire purpose of the Constitution was to limit government. Now, what do you suppose, brethren, the limitation, well, I'll go and read this, excuse me. That limitation of powers is what is unlocked in America, the vast human potential available in any population. Barack Obama sees that limiting of government not as a linchpin, but rather as a fatal flaw. You see, brethren, here's the thing. Well, what if you don't hold back the tyrant or hold back that radical left? What if you don't have a constitution to hold them back? Well, then you're just going to get into what we see all over the world, that you see tyrants everywhere you look. Do you think they're looking for some Bill of Rights or some constitution to tell them what to do? No, they have a better idea. They think they know how to run things. Just give me this and I know how to help the people, and I'll help them all, and we'll have a welfare state, and I'll be empowered, and I'll help the people like they should be helped. And he knows more than the founding fathers who founded the Constitution to, at least to some extent, and a pretty great extent at times, on biblical principles. Not on human reasoning. They had some Bible principles there to make sure that tyrants didn't take away our freedoms. That's pretty basic. But you have a man here from the far left who thinks he needs to change the Constitution. Now, what kind of Supreme Court judges do you think he'll appoint? You think he'll appoint any that wants to hold up the Constitution, uphold the Constitution? I don't think so. I don't think so. Now, again, that's exactly what this radical left wants, brethren. They, in their ignorance, which is dangerous ignorance, really think, in their human reasoning, they've got it right. And it's almost to the point of insanity. But they think they've got it right. But see, that's how flawed. It's not the Constitution that's so flawed. They at least pointed it to the Bible somewhat. It's the human mind that is flawed. And they don't have a clue about what human nature is. And they don't have a clue about the devil and how he rules his world. They don't even have a clue about that. Oh yes, Satan wants to wreck the Constitution so he can enslave us. And he has been doing that for oh so many years. 6,000 years. Do you want the nature of the devil ruling over you? You see, they sit there in their unbelievable ignorance and see, just envision how much more brilliant they are than those founding fathers who were flawed. They just didn't understand, and they didn't have a good modern education like Bill Ayers gives you today. They didn't have that good open-minded education where we have come up with great ideas that are spawned by the devil, and that's what they want to give us. I mean, the devil sits there even still, exalting himself above God, and he's been nothing but an absolute total disaster of a failure. But he still thinks he ought to be ruling the universe. God help us if ever such a thing were to happen. Do you think after this election that Satan is going to destroy a lot more quickly? Do you think he is? You think he's going to do a lot more destructive things after this election? I can tell you he is. This is the time in which we're living. Here we've had a message going out from the great God for over 70 years. And they just can't, well, they can't handle that. They don't want that, but they'll listen to a man who has all such radical ideas. Over 70% of single women voted for him. They just somehow, well, they were insecure. You see, women do want security in their marriages. Now they're singles. Many of them have children. Well, they want security, so they'll just go to him and let him make them feel secure. And they have not a clue what they're getting themselves into. Not even a clue. You see, because of the family breakdown. The right kind of family. Well, well, this article just says that, we wrote this up in the on the trumpet.com. Well, how he's gotten all these funds, over half of his funds that have come in by the millions overseas, as I understand it, more than half of the whopping $426.9 million Barack Obama has raised has come from small donors whose names the Obama campaign won't disclose. Where did they come from? Well, I mean, you could have really, let's be honest here, you could have, a lot of those are coming from overseas, you could have Ahmadinejad just funneling little small amounts over here from Arabs in his country, all over the place, and they could just, I mean, he outspent Mr. McCain by 3 to 4 to 1, and they could just buy the American election. Maybe that's what they did. Maybe they just bought it. Because Mr. Obama said he was going to take what the government gave and wouldn't rely on sources like that, but he changed his mind when he saw how much money he could get. That's here's another. But again, brethren, we don't even know where a lot of that money came from. Now, what do you think Satan is going to do in such an environment? What do you think Satan is going to do? He's not dumb. He's really, really very intelligent in how to destroy. He certainly isn't on how to build. Here's what Melanie Phillips wrote, 5th of November 2008. She was deeply saddened as well. She said, "This is a watershed election which changes the fate of the world. Those of us who have looked on appalled during the most frightening of presidential elections. What's going on? What's happening? They don't know. They're absolutely bottomed out in depression, I would think. What is happening? Well, we know. But anyhow," she said, "at the suspension of reason." She sees, well, they're not even reasoning. There's no reasoning here. This lady is very intelligent, one of the best columnists out there. From Britain. She said, "at the suspension of reason." So you could just, let's just listen to the radical left. These little nasty children, those little hateful childlike people, that's what we're listening to. They don't reason, they just react emotionally and hatefully. And it's replacement by thuggery. This is somebody from overseas. Can only hope that the way this man governs will be very different from the profile provided by the influences, associations, and record to date. It's a faint hope. The enemies of America, freedom, and the West will certainly be rejoicing today. And then she goes on to say that they have hijacked a country. Hijacked a country. And they have, brethren. They really, really have. So maybe God, well, he just let things happen, I guess. It's okay. Well, those guys haven't been in there in a while. Let's get them in there, the far left, and let them see how totally ignorant that they are. But it's going to get serious, brethren, and we need to know that. But listen, really, we've been waiting for this a long time. We've been waiting for this. Mr. Armstrong would love to be here now. Certainly, if he had vigorous health, he'd love to be here. At this critical time in the history of the world. And so we could tell the world, as more and more of them will be inclined to listen, where their true hope lies. But somehow God has to get that through to them. And they're far cry from it at this point. Here's what Newsmax.com said. I just want you to think about it, brethren. A former top deputy to Nation of Islam leader, this is by Kenneth Timmerman, a former top deputy to the Nation of Islam leader, Louis Farrakhan, tells Newsmax that Barack Obama's ties to black national movement in Chicago run deep, and that for many years the two men have had an open line between them to discuss policy and strategy either directly or through intermediaries. Now, again, brethren, this is a former top deputy to Nation of Islam leader, Louis Farrakhan. He's been there. He's seen it. He knows what's going on. Remember that for years, if you were a politician in Chicago, you had to have some type of relationship with Louis Farrakhan. You had to. If you didn't, you would be ostracized out of the black Chicago. And I don't somehow don't doubt those words. White said Obama was part of the Chicago scene where Farrakhan, Jesse Jackson, Jeremiah Wright, and radicals would go to each other's events and support each other's causes. And I tell you, if you look at all that we've been talking about, I don't doubt that. But let's not be naive, brethren. If there really is such a man who could cause elections to shift his way because of his influence in the black community, what about if he wanted to cause a race riot? You think maybe he might be able to influence people in that direction? Well, I would think so. I would think so. But you see, this is where we're moving, to that radical left. And the radical left thinks that's great. You think those people wouldn't like to change the Constitution of the United States? Well, of course they would. Of course they would. Now, you know our message isn't going to be popular, and I want to have respect for the presidency as much in that office as much as I possibly can, but we must not be muzzled. And you have to believe, I mean, those are the kind of people that will, well, if you go contrary to them, they will not take that lightly. But we will not allow ourselves to be muzzled, because we're going to tell the people of this world and this land where their hope lies and where their hope is. Because more and more of them are going to be scared about what is developing in America. And let me tell you something, brethren, God is right there with us every step of the way. And just says for everybody in the world to know that we are going to prevail. Nothing will stop that. That we're going to prevail. Well, I'll tell you this, brethren. That radical left, and I'm talking mostly about whites, are very much like the mafia in the way they conduct themselves. Very much like that. And I mean, the people of Israel ought to know more about themselves and their own identity than Mr. Obama does anyhow. They ought to know more, and they certainly ought to understand what Mr. Armstrong has taught them over the years, but they don't. They ought to know who they are. If they don't know who they are, how can they know what their destiny is or anything else? Here's another man. This is a black conservative. Listen to what he has to say. When I asked last week about the prospect of America being led by a radical leftist administration, Thomas Sowell, a black conservative author and senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, said, quote, "There is such a thing as a point of no return. If in those first 2 years Iran gets nuclear weapons, we will be at that point of no return. Sometimes people will say it's just as well to let those guys get in there and discredit themselves, and then we'll win in the backlash." People said that when Hitler was rising in Germany. And many of those people who said that died in concentration camps, which is a smaller tragedy than a nation dying. Now, this is a black man telling you what he believes. Do you think the radical left would do anything they can to stay in power? Don't you think they would do anything they possibly could to hang on to their rule? I mean, just look at the way they conduct themselves. Look at their fruits. These are not nice people. And somebody needs to tell them that and tell them what their punishment is going to be because of it. Can we really explain it? Well, at last, I'm really going to get into the Bible. I haven't been getting to the Bible very much, and it's getting on up toward the end. But let's get into the Bible. I want to go through some of Revelation 12 and a few other verses that to show you why we've reached the point of no return. There's a practical reason why. Can we really explain what's going on in this world, in America especially, and in Britain? The book of Revelation talks about two churches. Satan's mother of all churches and God's church. Verse 1 says, "And there appeared a great woman, wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars, symbol of the 12 tribes of Israel." But who is this, brethren? Who is it? Who are those people that are so blessed that they're actually clothed with the sun? Clothed with the sun. Who are those people? I mean, these must be powerful people. They must have a lot of power to be clothed with the sun. I mean, that's what we want to rejoice about, that clothing. And that's who we are. And thank God for that. Verse 2, "And she being with child cried, travailing in birth and pain to be delivered." That was the time of Christ's birth. "And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his head." He had 7 crowns upon his head. He ruled those 4 world-ruling empires that had 7 heads, and he had these crowns on his head, and then there were 10 crowns after that, where the Roman Empire was resurrected, and Satan ruled over every one of them. He just ruled it all. I mean, that's just routine in this world. He rules this world. But it gets worse in the end. It gets worse. And that's something we need to ponder. But he just routinely rules in this world. But who has a clue about that? Verse 4, "And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven." This great powerful being deceived 1/3 of the angels and did cast them to the earth. "And the dragon stood before the woman which was ready to be delivered and to devour her child as soon as it was born." So he had the power to deceive those angels, and sitting there where Christ had to be as a baby, had to be taken to Egypt. You know the story. And the Roman king had all the babies 2 years of age and younger, all of them killed. You notice that's just, Satan doesn't mind killing babies and women and anybody. He'll kill anybody. Just like the terrorists in the Middle East, they don't mind exploding little babies and anybody else. That's just the way they think. Just like the devil. No mercy, no pity, none. It's the world we live in. Christ had to battle Satan again at the age of 30 after he fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and then they had this titanic struggle, and Christ overcame him, and so can we, brethren, and so must we. See, here you're going to see as we go through here all the battles that God's church has had to endure all these many years. So don't look for mercy from Satan the devil. He doesn't have any. But look at this. "And she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto God and to his throne." What a future. What a wonderful truth. That this child that was reared by his family and now he's back with his father in heaven, he's going to rule all nations with a rod of iron. No more talking back, no more rebellion as a way of life. He's going to rule, and he's here preparing us right now for this very rule. I mean, we're getting ready for our headquarters positions. We really are being prepared. Are we thinking like God? Are we ready to be his helpmate and rule this earth with a rod of iron, where we know how to shut up the wrong attitude and make certain it stays shut up? We have to overcome the devil as Christ did. Now, we all have our flaws and problems, and we stumble. But brethren, listen. Listen to this. I mean, these are going to be some, there's going to be a short span of time that's going to be pretty rough. But look, we're here planning and preparing to rule forever with Christ. And there isn't anybody that can defeat us. if we use this awesome power that God has given us and stay with God. Verse 6, and the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared of God, and that they should feed her there 1,260 days, 1,260 years. God's church was on the run. 1,260 years, those very elect people of God just ran wherever God prepared a place for them, and they would go right to that place that the great God had prepared for them. And they didn't mind doing that, and they had the faith to do that. And they weren't just people that were easily intimidated. They'd stand up to anybody. Sure, they'd run to save their lives. But that's sort of like the way it is with God's people, isn't it? So much of the time. God prepared a place for them, and they failed to get out, really fulfill their commission throughout the ages until this very end time. The Ephesus era did it, and the Philadelphia era got the message out to the world, and the Philadelphia church in the Laodicean era is getting the message out to the world because of the power of God. Because of the power of God. His power is with this little church. Great power. God says, if they get tough, you get a little tougher. They get hard-headed, have a hardened forehead, you get harder. They try to shut you up, you show them you won't be shut up. Because you're here to deliver a message from the great, wonderful, loving God. And soon we won't run. We're going to put them on the run if they don't get in line. And that's about here, brethren. It's oh so terribly close. I mean, even if we are on the run, we don't have to have a headquarters like we have here to do the work, but God has given it to us, and He must want us to do a pretty impressive work because we have a beautiful building going up that is God's house. God's house. God rules this campus. God rules this church. And we're building Him a house. And the more we build that house, the more effective the work comes. And the more we can point this world to God. Say that, yeah, we build God a house, and a beautiful house like that, because He's the head of our church. This is God's house. What a blessed people we are. Verse 7 through 9. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon fought and his angels, and prevailed not. Neither was their place found any more in heaven. Satan was now, he's now on the run. He's been kicked out of heaven by Michael. Well, this is dual. It happened before, after he was put in charge of this earth and then went up to challenge God. But he lost. And now he's been kicked down, and he only has this earth to roam around. He and all of the demons, that's all they have. Now, you know that means more problems for us. But we're just going to demonstrate more of God's power, and we'll have our trials and we'll have our tests, brethren. But every single one of them will prepare us to rule with Jesus Christ. Every single one of them is certainly something God plans, because we're His family. But there was war in heaven. There's always war when Satan's around with God's people. He's always trying to overthrow God. But boy, God is going to use this climax, brethren, to show people just how horribly evil and deceived the human nature is. And He's going to use it to prepare us. And this is all about before the great tribulation. God is getting us ready. You are the apple of His eye. God is going to prepare us, and He's going to give us positions that are going to just about even make us faint when He gives them to us. I mean, it really is that majestic. It really is that wonderful. And it really is the greatest opportunity that any people in this end time will ever have is right now. Facing Satan's greatest wrath and letting him know we're not afraid, that we don't fear him at all. Notice how we overcome. Verse 10. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now has come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of His Christ. And for the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him. They overcame him. This is before the tribulation. This is how we overcame him. And the Laodiceans didn't yet. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, by having Christ's blood cover our sins. And by the word of their testimony, or living according to this word, which is Jesus Christ, that's how we overcame. And they loved not their lives unto death. They put God first and said, well, okay, if we have to die, we have to die. We're going to put God first, and we're living for eternity. We're not living for today. These people really had their focus on God. I mean, these are tough people. Brethren, these people are really, really tough spiritually. And that's what God is making all of us. But He accuses us. See, we get accused all the time. And that's just the way of Satan. But Satan is the one that's discouraged. He doesn't have anything to be encouraged about, brethren. And he wants to fill this world with as much unhappiness and misery and discouragement as he has. And that's what he's trying so hard to do. But he can't do that to any of us if we choose not to let it happen. He cannot do it. That's the power we have. But here, you see, here is really the reason we've reached the point of why we've reached the point of no return. Verse 12. And therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil has come down unto you having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time. See, he's been cast down. And he knows it's over for him. And that's why God says, woe would be unto the inhabitants of the earth. Woe to those people. Because Satan is cast down. He's right. He's confined to the earth. And he's full of his worst possible wrath. Is he going to get to you? Is he going to get to you, brethren? Is he going to get you discouraged? Is he going to get you so depressed you can't work? Is he going to get you so depressed you just want to give up? Well, we're almost at the end now. The world's looking for saviors. To this point, they're still looking for the wrong one, but God is going to use us as saviors of these poor, miserable, unhappy people who look to other human beings to save them. How miserable is that lifestyle? How miserable is it to be so enslaved to the devil's way of life that we can't be free of that? Free of the devil and free of human nature ruling us. And rejoice in that. We are the only people on this earth that can tell all those discouraged people what is going to happen and how they're all going to be saved. And they're all going to be full of joy and happiness and excitement. And it's just going to be the most wonderful earth that they could ever even imagine. What an opportunity that is. Time is short, and Satan knows it. But little brethren, we can't let this little short span of time get us down. But you see, as I pointed out in with those seven crowns that Satan has, those are normal times. But here we're talking about abnormal times. When you have a radical left government move in and want to take over, and they're going to be awfully hard to get out of there. Maybe they won't even have time anyhow. But Satan has been planning this, all of this, from 1986 right on down to this moment, in a very, very tense way. Intense way, I guess I should say. And has he ever prepared well? Well, it's a terrifying thing when he's been cast down. But you see, again, this is pretty basic, but I'm going to talk about this some in the campaign tomorrow night, I think. How do you know, you see, how do we really know that Satan has been cast down? I mean, you do have to look at the fruits, but you also have to look at this prophecy right here as well. I mean, can you look at the fruits and can you just kind of trace Satan right down to the present? Can you just sort of track him from, let's say, the time he was cast down right down to the present? Well, we really can. Notice verse 13. And when the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man child. See, he persecuted the woman. Well, let's see now. If we almost suddenly, after Mr. Armstrong died, if we lost 95% of our people, well, that's a terrifying tragedy, because 50% of them are going to die forever. We have to know when that happened. We have to know when all of that took place, or we don't discern anything spiritually. 95% of the people of God whom we loved and were close to, they just turn away from God as if they didn't understand anything. And we even had to fight them in court. That's how satanically motivated they were. We had to fight them to win Mr. Armstrong's material, the rights to it. And even get control or buy the copyrights. But I'll tell you, this is going to intensify and get worse and worse and worse until verse 14. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. We all better think about that. Here's our 1260 days, and the work of God will continue right on. But what if, brethren, what if some of you young people, you better think about this, what if you get left behind? What if you're not there? What if some of us are not there? I can give you a pretty good insight, and I think I have today, about what is coming if you don't get into that place of safety. This is reality. This is the real world I'm talking about. America has changed overnight. Now, I'm not saying everything is going to fall apart tomorrow, but it might the day after. It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad, brethren. But we don't have a thing to worry about, because we're going to prevail. We're going to prevail. And God, even in this, is going to cut time short, apparently by his return. And so that's good news as well. It goes on, verse 15, to talk about Satan swallowing up, his army being swallowed up as he chases us. Verse 15, let's see if I have time. Well, I think you can go ahead and read. I wanted to get into a few of those verses in Revelation 13. But I think I'll just skip a little of that. It's pretty basic. But I just want you to think about, if Satan is preparing so well for a radical takeover of this country, they better be thinking, everybody ought to be thinking about the time when the last Pope died. There were 2 billion people. What's that? 2 billion people? What is Satan doing with that? What is he preparing there? 4 to 5 million actually attended his funeral. What do you suppose Satan is preparing there? 200 world leaders were there from 100 countries. And then, boy, you had Catholic reporters there, and they'd get upset if you got upset when there were Catholic reporting. Very biased. Very biased. What is this cast down Satan going to do with that organization? I mean, he's going to make our radical left here look like it's nothing. You'd better watch, because that conglomerate is about to burst onto the world scene, and it's going to be organized to the little most minuscule detail, and this world is going to be horrified. And we're going to watch it from a place of safety and tell the world all about it and what it means and what Satan is about to do to them. So, I mean, Satan really knows how to organize. So much of it has been carefully planned. He really does plan his mother church, though. He really does do that. Well, I'm going to skip a little of this material I have here. I purposely prepared more than I thought I'd need, so I'd have a little more of an option tomorrow night and how I can use some of it, or a good bit of it, I think, in that first campaign. Let's go to Genesis 3. I want to show you something here that really does tie into this. Think about this, because it changed the course of world history. And I think after mankind suffers through all of these end time catastrophes, they're going to wish that Adam and Eve had eaten from a different tree. But they didn't. They wanted to be free from God, and they wanted to make their own decisions about religion and education. And look at what they've done. Look at the course they have set for humanity. Oh, what a decision. Of course, God gave Israel really another opportunity when he ruled them. But it's still, they didn't want it. Verse 1. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, yea, as God said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden. And the woman said unto the serpent, well, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. Now, I pointed out before that God did not tell Eve not to touch it. He told her not to eat it, but he didn't tell her not to touch it. That's just a little attitude Mother Eve had. Well, yes, we're not to eat it. You can't even touch it. I would imagine she said it something like that. Oh, Satan loved that. He loved that. Here comes Satan in that attitude. He just really comes at you. Here's what Mr. Armstrong wrote. I'll read this to you again. Satan, the master broadcaster. I could never have understood this until I had understood how radio and television sounds and pictures were transmitted through the air. And you've heard that, and I'll just skip part of it. And he said, Satan, as prince of the power of the air, broadcasts, not in words, sounds, or pictures, but in attitudes, moods, impulses. Well, he can't broadcast if we don't give him certain attitudes, moods, and impulses. He can't get to us. Satan moves on the human spirit within people to move them in attitudes of envy, jealousy, resentment, impatience, anger, bitterness, strife. People have no realization of the tremendous power of Satan. People have no realization of the tremendous power of Satan. The human spirit within each human is automatically tuned to Satan's wavelength. It seems as if Satan has surcharged the air over the entire earth with his attitude of self-centeredness and vanity. I'll tell you, that's exactly the way it is in Israel in this end time. See, the women are going to rule over the households. Isaiah 3 and verse 12, they just rule right over the household, just like Eve did, and the men just stand there like the dopes that they are and let it all happen, just like Adam. Well, just stand there and let the woman rule. She probably knows better than I do how to rule. Just let her rule, even though God said otherwise. Just stand there and let it happen. And wreck families and wreck nations. And now we see it right there in Technicolor. Go ahead. Well, it's all right. The man might say, but what does God say? What does God say? It's all directed by the devil. The Hebrew word for snake is fascination. People can be fascinated by, well, animals especially, and even people can be sort of affixed by the snake's eyes. And rabbits have lost their lives being sort of fascinated momentarily, and bam! It's the rabbit's dead, and makes a good meal for the snake, the serpent. Okay, 2 Corinthians 11, verse 1, I think we'll conclude there. 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 1. Verse 1, would to God you could bear with me a little in my folly, and indeed bear with me. So the Corinthians were criticizing Paul. For I am jealous over you with a godly jealousy. For I have espoused you to one husband, that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. But I fear. Remember Mr. Armstrong's last words about his one fear? He said, I fear what will happen to the church. That I fear. And that's what Paul said. And that's what Christ said. I fear lest by any means as the serpent beguiled Eve through his subtlety, so your mind should be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. It's really simple. There's simplicity there. In Christ, Eve was beguiled, but how beguiled has this world become? Listen to this, brethren, listen to this. We've seen it happen before our eyes. For if he that comes preaches another Jesus, what? Whom you have not preached, or if you receive another spirit, what? Which you have not received, or another gospel, which you have not accepted, you might well bear with him. Another gospel, another Christ, another spirit. I mean, the whole schmear, the whole religion has been destroyed. I mean, it's all been changed dramatically. Totally. Another gospel, another Christ, another spirit. Does Satan have that kind of power? Well, it took him about 22 years to change the Ephesus church to that condition. And Paul said, God pronounces a double curse on you if you do let that happen to you. You think Satan doesn't have power? Look what he did to the end time Joshua. He was in the bonds of the devil. The most pathetic ending possible for a Christian who has all that power and chooses the weakness of man and the weakness that just simply will always lose. But it shouldn't be that way. Verse 14. Satan, well, you can read that. He comes as an angel of light, and his ministers come as angels of light. But I'll tell you, brethren, the work has been blessed with phenomenal blessings, the Feast of Tabernacles, offerings, I should say, offerings that are so helpful to the work. And we got a $54,000 offering. I guess it was some kind of estate from a co-worker recently. And it just shows you that people, I believe, they really know that God is here. They know, and the more they see all of these things becoming unhinged in the world, they are frightened. And they want to know, well, what is the solution to all this? How can we solve these problems? Well, the hope is here. As you heard in the announcement about building of God's house, we're piling up steel out there like you've never seen before. I've never seen or heard of so much steel. To build God's house, a beautiful house for God to dwell in. And look how God is using this little group of people, a little tiny group of people, that just amaze the world. They just marvel at how much we do. But we've been waiting, brethren, waiting for years for this time to come. For America to really just reach that point and fall apart if they're not going to listen to God. And let's get on through the tribulation and to the return of Jesus Christ. But the reason, brethren, the reason we've reached the point of no return is because Satan now has such a stranglehold on Israel. They won't listen to anybody, and they won't ever listen to God until they suffer and suffer and suffer, till they finally give in in the great tribulation, and that great multitude comes out wanting to obey God, wanting for God to rule over them, wanting to stop the suffering and the misery and the heartache. And that time is oh so near, brethren. Much nearer, I think, even than we have thought. And we need to gear up for that. And let's make sure that we do everything we possibly can to give this world this glorious, glorious message that will inspire and give them hope as nothing else ever could on this earth.